we help parents move to a heart-based approach to parenting, we tell them to be careful about incentives. Well, that's hard because many parents rely on rewards to get their kids to do things. Then we tell them to avoid threats or bribes. That's hard too because we take away a primary means of motivation for many parents as they work with their kids. Then we say you can't nag or use anger to get your kids to do what you want. Then parents are totally baffled because we've taken away all their ammunition. Now, we know that's not true for all families, but there are certainly a lot of parents who need some new tools for moving forward with their children.
We then teach parents to be firm without being harsh, to teach children how to follow instructions, and to give children a plan for dealing with wrongs and offenses. It's a new way of thinking for many parents.
In this session, we're going to give you a plan. But before we can do that, we have to look at God's plan for change. When we understand how God works in our lives to bring about change, then it helps us develop a practical plan for our own kids.
Change needs to be measurable. Will you know in 30 days if your plan is working? You will if you start with a target and know where you're going. So in this session, we help you identify the target for your child, then we can develop a plan to get there. It's in this session that we want to help you understand a 30-day plan for change. Now, if you're going to see change in your child, you have to have a target. You have to know where you're going with that child. So I want you to take out a piece of paper for a moment and write on that piece of paper something while I'm talking here. I want you to write down a quality, a heart quality that you'd like to see your child develop and an arena that you'd like to see it developed in. You want to have both the quality and the arena in order to have this target formulated. We got to know where we're going if we're going to have measurable change in 30 days. You might use as a quality self-control in regards to anger management. You see, in 30 days, we'll know if that's being accomplished. So you want a heart quality and arena. Maybe the heart quality is kindness and the arena is toward his sister. Maybe the heart quality is thoroughness in turning in his homework. When you have a heart quality and an arena, then you've got a target that you can move toward. That's what we have to have in order to have a plan for change. We got to know where we're going.
I think this exercise is very helpful because too often in family life, we end up focusing on the behavior we don't like. And we try and stop the behavior we don't like, but we don't really have a goal. And even if we do have a goal, it's only a behavior goal. But we would suggest that behavior is just a symptom of deeper issues. So if we can have a goal that's a heart quality, this is what my child needs to develop in order to be successful in this area, then we've got something to really head toward. We've got a goal that's worth working on. We don't want to just focus on the negative, and we don't want to just focus on behavior, but we want to have a positive character quality goal in mind. This is what my child needs to develop to overcome this weakness, to overcome this problem. Once we have that kind of a goal, then we can develop a plan to really move our child forward.
This is a heart-based approach to change. Now that you have the target, we need some strategies, right? All right, I'd like to ask for 5 volunteers to come on up here with me, and I want to demonstrate something. You can just stand right here. Come on up, guys. What is your name?
My name's Larry.
Hi, Larry. Come on over here. Why don't you stand right here in the middle because you're having a problem with your sister. You're not being kind, so we're going to have to discipline you. So stand right here, turn around, bend over. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. All right. And what is your name?
Tanya.
Would you stand up here on this box there? And you're going to be my critical parent, and you're going to do a lot of finger pointing. Okay? You're going to be yelling at him with a lot of finger pointing. And what is your name?
Rex.
Rex. Good. Would you stand on this box here, Rex? And you're going to be my angry parent. So you're going to do a lot of yelling at Larry, trying to get him to change the way he's relating to his sister. And what's your name?
Diane.
Okay, Diane, you're going to be my dramatic parent now, right? You're going to be running around here yelling and upset with him, trying to get him to change, okay? And your name is?
Debbie.
Okay, Debbie, I want you to kneel down here in front of Larry, and you're going to be my parent that's begging, okay? You're going to beg Larry to change. Are you ready to do that? Okay, you guys got 5 seconds to do it. Everybody ready? Okay, go. Okay, thank you. Let's give them a hand. Thank you. You folks can go ahead and have a seat.
All right.
Now, we do that exercise in particular because we want parents to see that there's a lot of bad ways to parent, a lot of ways that aren't helpful. And if you saw yourself represented there, you might want to change some of the ways that you're relating to your child, at least if you're choosing strategies that are going to adjust the heart. It's very important for us to realize also that there's lots of good ways to parent. You may be doing some good things right now.
Maybe we just need to change to some other good things because maybe the good things you're doing aren't working. We want to give you some strategies to work with your children.
There are a lot of good ways to parent, but I think that's one of the things that makes parenting so difficult, because we can be doing some good things and they're not working. Maybe they even worked last year when our child was 4, but now he's 5 and they're not working anymore. Maybe they worked with Susie, but they don't work with Billy. So there's a lot of different strategies that we've got to understand and put into practice, and if something's not working, we've got to make some adjustments. And not only are there a lot of ways to parent, but there are a lot of different kids, aren't there? I mean, kids are all different. Their personalities are different, their issues are different, their problems are different. And then there are some kids who are just even outside the range of what normal parenting is really helpful for. These kids, you know, whether they've got a neurodevelopmental behavioral stuff going on, they've got ADD, ADHD, and just the typical things that may have worked with another child are not working with this child. And so we really need to get some new ideas of how we're going to work with a particular child in our family.
Let's talk about those children who fit under the neurological behavior umbrella. A child who has something going on inside of his brain that's affecting his behavior. Take the child with attention deficit disorder, for example. Some people would see a child who has attention deficit disorder and they would say, oh boy, his parents aren't doing a good job. I think that's really sad. There is a reality that some children have stuff going on inside of their brains that make it very difficult for them to pay attention. Imagine what's going on in their conscience. They know that the right thing to do is to pay attention to the teacher. But inside, they have this little feeling going on in their stomach. They hear the boy tapping his pencil behind them. They hear the garbage man dumping trash outside. And so they have a hard time paying attention to what's going on. A child with attention deficit disorder has something going on inside the brain. As the nerve endings are passing information, the chemical transmissions are not working efficiently. So there's a challenge that these children face. It's important for us to help these children because they're often magnets for correction, aren't they? Oh, we find ourselves correcting them day in and day out. They need help in their lives, and we're going to develop a plan now and show you how to help a lot of these children and, of course, all the other children as well. There's work that we can do that will help them on the inside.
You can imagine these children who are struggling so, who are getting a lot of negative attention. They have a real conscience issue going on because they know the right thing to do, but their body, for one reason or another, is not allowing them to do the right thing. And so they want to do what's right. They're not able to do it. They're getting a lot of negative attention. They feel like they're just not measuring up. They're not meeting their own standards. They're not meeting the teacher's standards. A lot of people are telling them they're doing it wrong. These kids have a real problem in their conscience. And one of the things that they need is a sense of hope. Our children need hope. It's a problem for all of our children. I think they can easily become hopeless, feel hopeless. I'm stuck where I am and I can't change. But certainly children with these particular challenges need hope. And so that's another parenting strategy that we want to share with you, is to help children have a sense of hope, to give hope to children, to develop a hope in their life.
Let's go back to some theology. Let's look at a theology of last things, sometimes called eschatology. It's all about hope. God didn't share these things in the scripture just so we could figure out a calendar of when he's going to come back. God shares these last time events and warnings and so on so that we'll know that there is a last chapter of the book that's already been written. We can be excited about the fact that we know what the last chapter sounds like. We know that we're winners in the end if we have Christ living in our lives. We know that there's a judgment. We know that God has heaven planned for us. That's a very hopeful message. God has designed his message to be very hopeful. Now, we need to take that message and bring it down to a child's level so that children can experience hope every day. That's what God wants for our kids. They need to be able to experience hope in their lives. We want to just pass that on to them. So one of the parenting strategies is to provide hope for your child.
And I know that as parents, sometimes we feel hopeless. But I would just suggest that if as a parent you're feeling hopeless today, how much more hopeless is your child feeling? At least as adults, we have a sense of maturity. We see that life changes sometimes. We're not always right here where we are now. But children don't have that maturity. They haven't been alive long enough to see how change happens. And so they see the world the way it is right now, imagining that it's always going to be that way. The problems I have now, I will always have. And so we really need to help these children to envision change, to realize that we can move beyond this. You don't have to stay where you are. We want to provide that hope for a child.
God has a prescription for hope. And we find that in Romans chapter 5, verses 3 and 4. There are four words there that help us understand, and hope is the last one. Suffering produces perseverance. Perseverance produces character, and character, hope. You see the progression there? Now, out of those four words, you can only control one of them. You can't control the suffering for the most part. You can't control the hope. It's a byproduct. You can't control the character. It's a result. You only can control the perseverance. That's the plan part. See, in perseverance, we teach children how to think differently, how to act differently, and how to trust God in the difference. That's what we're doing. That's God's prescription for hope, and we're helping them to move in that direction.
Well, I don't know about you, but I don't really like that prescription because I don't like to see my children suffer. And I think many of us parents feel that way. We want to protect our children from suffering. We want to rescue them from suffering. We certainly can't stand by and watch them suffer. And so we start to get in the way. But the reality is that it's often the suffering in life that produces the perseverance, the character, and the hope. We know that as adults, that often it's the trials in our lives that create strength in our character and make us depend on the Lord, and we grow because of the struggles and trials we have. But there's something about watching a child suffer. We just want to get in the way and protect our child from that. And sometimes we do protect our children from suffering, but often we have to come alongside them and coach them through the difficult times, because that's when the character is really built, and that's what's going to help them move forward. So as parents, we need to be careful about how we respond to suffering in our child's life.
I want to read you a story, or a letter that was sent to us. This is a letter from a mom who tested out our children's program on this same material called Hero Training Camp. Hero Training Camp takes children through a study of the life of David, identifying ways that they can be heroes in life now, and particularly dealing with the suffering that they experience and working on that in their lives. Here's what she said. I sent a little 7-year-old boy out the door this morning with a charge. He hates art. His teacher is old and grumpy, if I might say so myself. Art is nothing more than cutting perfect straight lines, in her opinion. Art is quiet and there is no nonsense to be had. If a child makes a mistake, his paper is thrown away and he's dismissed back to class. Sounds barbaric to me, a teacher trained in the early 1900s. Anyway, Isaac has been getting sick on Mondays. It took me 2 weeks to figure this pattern out. Art is on Mondays. Finally, we figured something was going on. Isaac fessed up to his disdain toward art class. After talking it out and talking it out and talking it out, we settled on looking back at David from the Bible. We realized we must look at the situation as if we were in training. I wanted to go in and give Ms. Art my 3 cents on the value of artistic expression in a child's life. And Isaac wanted to quit. We both agreed that God was using this to teach us something for the bigger plan. We needed to be able to defeat the problem and not run from it. It was Isaac's giant. And without using a real stone, although I might have liked to, we needed to figure out how to get through it and be stronger in the end. With a great big hug and a hero's charge, Isaac headed off to art today. He said he would cut with all of his ability, and sure, what a great cutter with a great cutting edge attitude he could have. I am so grateful for this curriculum. It gives me words to help my kids and a biblical basis to stand upon. Otherwise, I would have probably reamed out a tired art teacher and badly represented self-control to my child. Thanks, Laura.
Suffering comes into the life of a child. Sometimes it's a teacher who seems to be rather unrealistic. Sometimes the suffering comes in because a coach is being harsh. Maybe the suffering comes in because a child has some kind of illness or disease, or there's a difficult family situation going on. Suffering can happen for a lot of different reasons. Sometimes it's financial struggles, and we feel sorry for our children, and we start making excuses for them because they're going through a difficult time in life, and the family situation is what we would think not best. But the reality is that it's often in those times of suffering that our children have the opportunity to grow. They have the opportunity to develop perseverance and character and hope. So as parents, we don't want to be so afraid of the suffering in a child's life, but we want to take advantage of it. We want to allow God to use it to grow that child on the inside. So as parents, we need to be willing to come alongside the child and coach them and help them. Help them have a plan to deal with it so they can handle the suffering of life.
You know, sometimes the suffering that takes place in our children's lives, we need to give them. I'm not saying we need to be mean to our children, but sometimes we need to come to the conclusion we're not going to live this way anymore. A child who keeps giving a bad attitude when following instructions or resisting even instructions, that child may need a boot camp experience in following instructions. We may have to put some pressure on that child. We may have to create some suffering, as it were, to raise the perseverance level, to increase the character, and to build hope. We need to be able to help our children do that, and sometimes that means we put the pressure on. Here's an important fact. Are you ready for this? There's a very important fact that's true about all of your children, my children, about all of our kids. The fact is, your child needs therapy. But the reality is, you are the best therapist for your child if you have a plan. You see, therapy means practice sessions. That's what it means. If you go to the physical therapist because your shoulder is hurt, that means that the normal activities of life are not providing enough therapy for your shoulder. Just the getting dressed, working on the computer is not doing it. You've got to do more. And so you go to the physical therapist several times a week. The same thing's going to be true with our children. If they're having trouble following instructions, you can't just change the instruction routine and expect your children to change in the morning or getting ready for the mealtime or getting ready for bed. These children often need practice sessions. I would encourage you to have 10-minute practice sessions with children following instructions in order to help them develop the new character patterns in their life, in order to develop the cooperation and responsibility necessary.
Sometimes the problems that our children have become patterns of problems in their life, and they have to develop some new patterns. New habits and patterns are developed over time with practice. So we have to add extra suffering, in a sense, so that they have more opportunity to practice, so they can develop these new skills they need. It's not just in the everyday interaction, but we've got to add the extra practice sessions so that our children will grow.
Let me tell you a story about Jack. He's 5 years old, and whenever mom says no, he gets angry, throws himself on the floor. He's upset about it. He can't handle it whenever mom says no. Grandpa heard about this. Grandpa wanted to help. So Grandpa was going to visit, and Grandpa, understanding these principles, decided he was going to help with the pressure, and he was going to help with the plan. You don't give children pressure until you give them a plan. So Grandpa came in, and he says, "Jack, I've got some ideas for you when you get angry. You know, when Mom says no?" Jack says, "What?" "Well, let me tell you, one thing you can do is take a deep breath. Why don't you try that? Another thing you can do is take a deep breath and walk around the room, because sometimes you need more than just a deep breath. A third thing you can do is just take a break and sit down for a little bit and try to calm down. Does that make sense? Sound like a plan?" Jack says, "Okay." Grandpa says, "I brought you a present." "You did? What?" Jack said. Well, he gave him the present, opened it up. It was a floor puzzle for six-year-olds. Jack was only five. You see, Grandpa wanted to put some pressure on, create some frustration for Jack, and help him process this. So they started working on the floor puzzle, putting it all together. And Jack would start to get frustrated. And so Grandpa would say, "I think it's time for a deep breath." So Jack would take the deep breath. They'd work on it some more, and Jack would get frustrated. "I think maybe you ought to walk around the room." So Jack would walk around the room. "Before you sit down, Jack, why don't you look and see if you can see a piece that might fit somewhere else. See if you can look at it from a different angle." They worked on this together, but Grandpa didn't help Jack solve the puzzle problem, because Grandpa wasn't building a puzzle. Grandpa was building a boy. He's putting on some pressure, making some difficulties, frustration for his grandson so that he could handle it with some new plans. The next morning, Grandpa was stretching in the living room, and as he was stretching, Jack comes along. He says, "Jack, you want to stretch with me?" He says, "Okay. Come on, every time you reach down to touch your toe, you say a word. Ready? Say these words with me: true, noble, right, pure, lovely, admirable." Every time you stretch, you say those words. Now, you know where those words come from, don't you? They come from Philippians chapter 4. Whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is noble, think about these things. See, Grandpa was saying, these are the things we want to think about. Jack says, "What's lovely?" "Oh, lovely. Well, let's go for a walk." So they went out for a walk, and as they're walking along, Grandpa says, "See those flowers over there? They're lovely. Tell me something else that's lovely." And Jack pointed to a tree. "That's Lovely, yes. Now we know what lovely is. They're walking along and praying in the morning, and Grandpa says, I don't know when it's going to happen. Jack says, what? I don't know, but it's going to happen soon. What? What? Are you ready for it, Jack? I don't know. What is it? Your mom's going to say no. Are you ready for that? I don't know. Well, Jack, I've given you some ideas here. Think about these good things. You can take a deep breath. You can walk around the room. Are you ready? I think so, Jack said. Okay, well, go try it. Well, Jack was one of those kids that asked for a lot of things. No wonder he got a lot of no answers. Many times in the course of the day, Jack responded well and caught Grandpa's eye. The plan was working. But every once in a while, Jack would throw himself on the floor. He'd be angry and upset. And when he was done, he came over to Grandpa, and Grandpa says, come on, what did you do wrong? Why was that wrong? What are you going to do differently next time? Okay, let's go try again. You see, the pressure was put on this boy, but he was given a plan first. We have to give our children a plan, then put the pressure on. That's part of what we're going to do here is our 30-day plan is we're going to identify what do we want our children to do? What exactly do we want them to do so that we can move forward? Because when they start doing those things, it's going to start building some new patterns in the heart we call character.
And when that character grows, then we're going to see some improvement in our children. So the suffering is very helpful when children have a plan, because they can respond to that suffering then, and they have their plan, and over time we see the character develop that they need to be successful in that area of life.
Here's what we're trying to do with children. We're trying to raise the character threshold. Let me explain what a threshold is. The threshold is this point right here. And when the problems of life permeate the threshold, the child acts out or it becomes overwhelming for the child. What we want to do is raise the character threshold so the child's able to handle the struggles of life. A threshold. Now, we can raise the threshold with medication for a child who has attention deficit disorder. It does raise the threshold. We're not medical doctors, so we don't recommend medication. A lot of our clients are on medication. I'll tell you this, though, some of those clients will get off medication when their character increases. Character development is the long-term solution. So we're trying to help those children develop a sense of character inside their hearts. How many of you drink coffee? Great, you'll understand this illustration then. You see, when you have your cup of coffee first thing in the morning, you want to get it before everybody wakes up, including the dog, right? And the reason you do that is because you want to raise your character threshold. Well, not character, but you want to raise your threshold a little bit, right? Because it's got caffeine in it. It's a drug. And we can do the same thing with children. We're talking about something a little bit different. That even if you're using medications, we're going to add to by raising the character threshold in a child's life. That's our target. That's what we're trying to do, is raise that character threshold.
And then the character is going to help them to handle the challenges more effectively. Maybe your son has an irritating sister. She's just annoying, but every time she does something that's irritating, he reacts to it. He gets angry or he gets mean, and so he has his reaction to her irritation. Now imagine that your son develops the character quality of tolerance. We raise the character threshold, he develops tolerance in his life, and so now when the sister is irritating, she's annoying, he doesn't react. Because the character threshold is allowing him to maintain his ability to just be functional without reacting to her. He can just handle it because he has the character necessary. So when we're working with our children, if we can raise the character threshold, we can help them to handle the challenging situations of life.
Let's take a moment and evaluate what you'd like to see changed in your child. Likely you see a weakness that may cause frustration in you, but you see that the child will be hindered in life without significant change. Take a few minutes and consider this question. What is an area where you believe your child needs practice sessions to overcome a weakness? You might share the heart quality and arena you jotted down earlier.